भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 1, Chapter 19, The Appearance of Shukadeva Goswami. Sorry for my late arrival.
Yesham.
Samsmaranam Pumsam Sadhya Shudhyanti Vai Griha Kim Gurna Vashana Sparsha Pada Sochasana Divihi Yesham Of whom? Samsmaranam. By remembrance. Pungsam. Of a person. Sadhyaha. Instantly. Sudhyanti. Cleanses. Vai. Certainly. Griyaha. All houses. Kim. What? Purnaha. Then. Dashana. Meeting. Sparsha. Touching. Pada. The feet. Socha. Washing. Asana adhibihi. By offering a seat, etc. Translation, simply by our remembering you, our houses become instantly sanctified. And what to speak of seeing you, touching you, washing your holy feet, and offering you a seat in our home. Purport, the importance of holy places of pilgrimage is due to the presence of great sages and saints. It is said that sinful persons go to holy places and leave their sins there to accumulate. But the presence of the great saints disinfects the accumulated sins, and thus the holy places continue to remain sanctified by the grace of the devotees and the saints present there. If such saints appear in the homes of worldly people, certainly, the accumulated sins of such worldly enjoyers become neutralized. Therefore, the holy saints actually have no self-interest with the householders. The only aim of such saints is to sanctify the houses of the householders, and the householders therefore should feel grateful when such saints and sages appear at their doors. A householder who dishonors such holy orders is a great offender. It is enjoined, therefore, that a householder who does not bow down before a saint at once must undergo fasting for the day in order to neutralize the great offense. Om Agyanam Timirandasya Dhinandana Shalakriha Chakshur Militam Yena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha Sri Chaitanya Manobhishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Swaparantikam Namasreshta Manimapi Sachi Putra Matra Surupam Rupam Tasya Gradam Rupadim Maturim Goshta Vritim Radha Kunda Girivadam Horadika Madhavasam Praptaya sapatita kripaya Sri Gurum tam natosmi Yesham sam smaranat pungsam Satya shubhyam vai griyaha kim purnadarshana sparsha parasocha sanadibihi. Simply by our remembering you, our house become instantly sanctified. And what to speak of seeing you, touching you, washing your holy feet, and offering you a seat in our home. It's said in the early stages of the Srimad Bhagavatam that a devotee is literally a walking holy place. Tirtha Kurvanti Tirthani. But wherever the devotee of the Lord appears, the devotee takes with him the Dham, the holy Dham. And therefore the devotee is a very great asset to human society, to the community, to the family, to the householders, the devotee, because he's literally a holy Dham, a walking Dham. So you don't have to go to the Dham. If you get the association of the sadhus, of the devotees who have captured Krishna, the reason why they're a holy Dham is because the devotees have no other thought than Krishna. Maranyatate na jananti. The devotees who see Krishna in everything and understand and perceive Krishna's presence in the heart, then they're completely sold out to Krishna. Naham te bhyo managa, being Krishna sold out to them. Sadavodidayam mayam. Sadunam didayam taham. Lord Vishnu told Durvasa Muni, who was seeking shelter, seeking refuge from the Sudarsan Chakra that was chasing him from his offences to Maharaj Ambarish. And when he finally got to the abode of Lord Vishnu, Lord Vishnu couldn't give him shelter because he committed an offence against this holy person, Sadhu, Raja Rishi, king, great king, that is Sadhu. And because he committed a sin, offence against the sadhu, then he has no shelter. And so now Lord Vishnu, he explained the intimate connection between the devotees and Krishna. And this intimate connection between Krishna and his devotees explains the potency of the devotee. Because the sadhu is nothing without Krishna. A sadhu doesn't have any potency without the connectedness with Krishna, connection with Krishna. The sadhu or the guru or the Vaishnavas are transparent via media. That means nothing becomes disturbed. There's no obstacle. It's clear, a clear vision, a conduit. It's a clear passage between Krishna and Krishna's mercy through the devotees to society, to the conditioned souls. And therefore, sadhus are highly regarded in the Srimad Bhagavatam and in the Vedic literatures. That we need to get those sadhus association, we need to see them, we need to touch them. Yesterday we were talking to somebody, a non-devotee, who's got some appreciation for Krishna consciousness, but a lot of appreciation for the material energy also, and likes heavy metal. I don't know if many of you probably never heard what heavy metal is, but heavy metal is a unique genre of music. It's very loud, and it's difficult to understand what the singer is singing. And if you do understand what the singer is singing, you'll be disgusted. So better not to understand what the singer is singing, the vocals. But usually it's a lot of, when they talk, it's a lot of four-letter words and not much more. So it's a very kind of heavy type of entertainment. Metallica and Slipknot and these bands. He was telling me all about his bands that he likes. So much he likes these bands. And he went to a big concert here in Melbourne. And I think it was Metallica. Gopi Vrindeshwar, you won't have a clue what I'm talking about. But anyway. We're talking about heavy metal. It's something from another planet. And This guy was talking like this, and he was telling me about this concert he went to here, and I think it's Metallica, or it might be some other band. They wear masks. Is it Slipknot or Metallica? Slipknot. They wear the masks. So the mask guy comes off the stage, and he comes to the like into the center of the auditorium where they're mixing the sound and everything. So he came down there to fix something up off the stage, and he was there. And so he got to touch him. He got to touch one of the band members. Really sweaty guy, you know, and he's abusing everybody and telling them they're all dogs and life equals something horrible, you know. So they're really demoniac. Like in New Zealand, we have this company called Hell's Pizza. Maybe they're going to come to Melbourne. So Hell's Pizza. It's the biggest thing in New Zealand. Hell Pizza. And they have all their advertising is about demons and, you know, really demoniac things. So, but to touch this person was, you know, he felt really exhilarated by that, by the sparsha, by the touch of this you know, unmentionable. He felt enlivened, and it was a success, it was the goal. You know, he felt very happy that he went to the concert and he touched one of the Slipknot. The starts, so he can say that. But what to speak, that's Slipknot, you know, and you feel some thrill. But if you touch a devotee, then you'll feel genuinely the soul will be very satisfied and will be enlivened and think, wow, I got so much mercy. Jivan Chavo Bhagavatam Hridayenum. In the 6th canto of Bhagavatam, it says, if you haven't put the dust of the lotus feet of the devotee, smeared that dust all over your body, then your life is useless. You're a dead body. Thank you. If you don't put the dust of the lotus feet of the devotees on your body, then you got a useless body. It's like a dead body. Jivan Chavo Bhagavatam Hridayenum. So the dust of the lotus feet of the devotees, the touch of the devotees, is what gives us Krishna consciousness. It's the connection with the spiritual, the transcendental energy that inspires the jiva to want to become devotional, want to become Krishna consciousness, want to develop our Krishna consciousness. That's the kutta, that subtle form of that Rupa Goswami talks about in his anatomy of sinful activity. He says kutta, bija, parabdha and aparabdha. These are 4 stages of sin. And kutta, he says, is more subtle form than bija. Bija is the seed, but the kutta is the propensity or the inclination toward for acting, and more subtle than the seed, planting the seed. So we say it's when you perform an action, you develop a habit. By performing activities that we do every day, we become habituated. And by that habit, we develop our character, or we manifest or exhibit a particular character. And that came from our thought process, from our thinking. So what are we associating with in our thoughts? What are we associating with in our intelligence and with our mind? That will determine ultimately our character, which will be a manifestation or a display of our habits. And the habits are those things that we do every day. So that disposition, that the original inclination toward action, is a subtle form. And we have to purify that level. We have to get to that level and rewire the hard drive. Rewire the consciousness at that level, at the subtle level, consciousness level. And then we'll sow, the seed will become a seed of punya. Rather than papa, it will become punya seed. It will become auspicious seed, or pure, devotional seed. So we'll contemplate and think about activities that will be favorable for cultivation of bhakti, of devotional service, for getting dissociation of the devotees, for thinking about them. Here it says, just to think about the devotees, our house has become sanctified. Samsmaranat. Smaranat is from remembrance, right? But samsmaranat means completely, or towards, fully remembrance of this Sankirtan, full kirtan, everybody together kirtan. So some smadhanat, everyone, the whole thought, remembrance of the devotee becomes, our houses become sanctified. Sadyashu dhyanti vayagriyaha, all of our houses become sanctified by thinking of the devotees. Then it says, what to speak of that? Kim purna dashana spasha, by the sight and by touching. By touching the slipknot, by touching the devotee, by touching the pure devotee, and offering him a seat, etc. Adibihi. In Sanskrit, this adibihi means etc., etc. And other things as well, not just the seat. Padyam, madupak, agyam, many things we can offer. Pleasant words, prasadam, food, sweets. And we get them to stay a long time in our house, but at least a moment of sadhu sangha, sadhu latarma, sadhu siddhi. All perfection can come from this lava matra, sadhu sangha, from the association of devotees. One time we were traveling from Mayapur to Vrindavan, to Delhi, from Calcutta, more likely from Hara to New Delhi station. And we got to the other way around, we got to Hara station from Delhi, and we were bringing a whole lot of books, boxes of things to Calcutta. So it was difficult to get across the platform, and you know the whole thing, a lot of people there trying to get across and sweating and after a long journey. And then in the distance I saw Jayapataka Maharaj on the station, on one of the platforms. And he was with his entourage. I saw Jayapataka Maharaj and maybe, you know, five or six brahmacharis from Mayapur. That was a long time back. And then I felt immediately, you know, I was really harassed by these different living entities that were harassing me on the train station, adivotikas. But then when I saw Maharaj, when I saw his devotees, and they were helping him get across and putting him into his big van, his Mayapur van, and I felt relieved, and I felt like, I was really trying to get everything sorted so I could get there and maybe get a lift with them to my port, so I could rush across to catch them. But as I got across, I got through all of my miseries. Their van was just pulling out of the Hara station. So. But I felt, it didn't matter, I felt really enlivened and freed from my distress of travelling and the harassments that come with the travelling to Mayapur, to Calcutta, to Hara station. So that lava matra, that moment's association, is very powerful. One time I was travelling to Bangladesh, and it was the first time I travelled to Bangladesh from Mayapur, and you can get there very quickly, it's not far from Mayapur. I mean, you can go to Calcutta and fly to Dhaka, and that will take forever, you know, 5 hours on that road to Calcutta, and in and out of the potholes, and drive into the potholes, and out of the potholes. But, or you could just go across, you know, across the border. Have you been there yet? You can just cross the border, very simple process. You get a bus somewhere. I had Atul Krishna Prabhu, he gave me this, he goes there a lot, so he gave me the list of things I have to do to get there. Catch the bus to here, and catch a rickshaw, and then catch this, and then get a rickshaw across. And you're in Bangladesh, within a couple of hours, you're in Bangladesh from Mayapur. And it's a whole different world, but at the border of Bangladesh and India, of course, there's a border crossing. That's the only trick. You have to get through this border crossing. They can send you back. If they don't like the look of you, they can send you back. So I stayed the night there. It's a place called Benapur, I think. Okay. Benapur. And then the other side is Haridaspur. Haridaspur is a place where Haridas Thakur, he purified the prostitute who came to allure him from his tapasya, from his vrata. She came. She was sent there by the envious Kazi. So at this place, the devotees, there's a temple there, a very nice temple. There's a temple on both sides of the border, in India and in Bangladesh. But one in Bangladesh isn't an ISKCON temple. The one in India is a ISKCON temple now. After a long time, it became an ISKCON temple. And they've done some, it's one of those, you know, we have that trust for renovating the holy places in the Dharma, in Mayapur. That's one of the places that was resurrected by the trust, I forget the name of the trust, some Bhaktivedanta charity trust, for resurrecting holy places in the Holy Dharma. Anyway, I stayed there the night. I didn't stay in India. I went to the Haridaspur, and I stayed in Haridaspur with this temple. It wasn't ISKCON. I thought it was ISKCON. I just thought everything was ISKCON in those days. Hare Krishna means you're in ISKCON. But I was saying that, I was thinking, it's not ISKCON. something just a bit different. But it was all pretty cool. You know, everybody was chanting. Everybody looked like, you know, like ISKCON devotees. And so we stayed there the night. And they do 24-hour kirtan there. And they've done 24-hour kirtan since Mahaprabhu's time. It's just kirtan village. The whole village is just kirtan. That's what they're doing. In this village, you just do kirtan. It was very nice. And they have a 7 o'clock aarti ceremony. And it's not Gaudiya Vaishnava. It's not a Gaudiya Mat either. They're just Gaudiyas. They don't have sampradaya. They're just chant Hare Krishna, these people. But they do a lot of Gaudiya. They're connected with Narottam Das Thakur. Narottam Das Thakur has a sampradaya of his particular type of kirtan. So they're connected with that kirtan. That's his sampradaya. Narottam Das Thakur sampradaya. Mat. So in this mat, they do Tulsi Aarti. They have deities and they worship Gauri Thai. They have Gaur Aarti, Bhaktivinoda Thakur. They sing. And then they also worship. They sing a lot of bhajans of Narottam Das Thakur. And the first bhajan they do, it takes the evening program goes for a couple of hours. And it's just kirtan. So you circumambulate Tulsi and then you circumambulate the temple and then you circumambulate, you know, you go outside in the village and come back. And you sing all different bhajans, with Hare Krishna in between. But one of the bhajans that they sing after Tulsi Aarti, and it's the same Tulsi Aarti pretty much that we do, similar Tulsi Kirtan, then they sing Ebohoro Vaishnava, this song by Narottam Das Thakur. And Narottam Das Thakur, he says that there's no one more merciful than the Vaishnavas. And it's very similar to this point that's being made today in this chapter of Bhagavatam. That when you see, just by mere audience, all sins go far away. When you see a Vaishnava, then the sins go papa dure jai. They go a long way away. Sin, just by seeing a devotee, the sins leave us. Sometimes when you're in association of advanced devotees, you don't feel like going for a Kentucky fry or something like that. You don't feel like falling down. You don't feel like going to have some illicit connection or something. Because you're with a powerful person. You don't feel like going to have a bet at the trots or something. Or here they gamble on dogs. They have dog races. They can go and gamble on dogs. So you don't feel like that. When you're with a sadhu, you don't think, well, I wonder what dog's going to win the second race today at the dog track. You don't think like that. You feel inspired by the devotee. All the reaction and all the inclination and all the bad things, bad thoughts go away. And you think, how can I keep this association? How can I maintain this level of consciousness? And the whole place becomes transformed by the association of the sight, by mere audience of the Vaishnava. All sins go far away. Sinful thoughts, sinful actions, sinful reactions. For that time, at least there's liberation, a sense of liberation. Kamani nidati kintu cha bhakti bhajan. Krishna will take care of the karma of a devotee. Lord Brahma says that Krishna can take care, he can adjust, he can make adjustments. He can stop it completely. He can not just minimize, but he can stop it completely. That's the power of Krishna. Karmani nidati kintu cha bhakti bhajam. For the devotees who do bhakti, he can stop that. So that sight of the devotee is very, very important. And it says the Ganga can purify. After swimming a lot of time, you go to the Ganga. We have a devotee who's in Mayapur now. He's a famous devotee in Australia called Lagudi Prabhu. He met Srila Prabhupada here in the Melbourne Town Hall for the first time. And I think he was at the back of the stadium, at the back of the hall, standing on his head. He was doing some special yoga asana. Lagudi is a very unique person. He's Croatian, I think. Isn't he Croatian? Something like that. So he's a very unique devotee. Some of you might know him. He hasn't been here very often, Melbourne and Harvard, but he was running a very successful cow program in the New Govardhan at Northern New South Wales. And he became famous for taking the bullets out on the banana festival, on different festivals up north. Mm-hmm. And he could do a handstand on the back of the bullock. Huge bullocks, right? And he'll stand on top of the bullocks upside down. And then people go, this is a very far out movement. Hare Krishna movement is very far out. Everybody stands on these bullocks upside down. That's pretty spiritual. So he attracted a lot of publicity, a lot of attention. And anyway, he did many. He woke Radha Govardhan Dari every day for about 25 years. He's finished up in Mayapur. And what he does in Mayapur, he's on a pension from Australian government. Mr. Kevin Rudd. The Right Honourable Mr. Kevin Rudd. He's doing some seva. He gives this devotee in Mayapur a pension. He pays him to swim in the Ganga for 4 hours a day. He goes to the Ganga. He took me to the Ganga one day. I was there for maybe 5 months last year. And I hardly ever went to the Ganga. I hardly ever went outside the gate of Mayapur. All my service was inside and I just didn't go outside. But one day I thought, I'm just about to leave Mayapur. And I've been here since July, since the hot season, since rainy season, everything. And I didn't go to Ganga yet. So if I go back and say I didn't go to Ganga, everyone's going to say, you stupid, you didn't go to Ganga. Like, so I'm going to go to Ganga. And I say, your duty, take me to the Ganga. So he said, all right, I go every day, not a problem. So he took me to Ganga. He has his leather hat. He has this kind of crazy big bowler hat thing. And he's very kind of eccentric. He has his shorts on and he goes out. And he takes you through the reeds on the Ganga, like not where everyone, not in the bathing ghat, not Prabhupada ghat or something like that. That's too simple for the Guru. You have to go through this, all these rushes and reeds and very, and it was muddy, really muddy. Like, and so I was in my dhoti and we're walking through mud up to here, everything's trash. And then he goes into this part of the Ganga where you can't stand on the floor of the riverbed. It's all soft mud, really soft mud. And so when you walk in, the fuller you go up to your hips, fully in the sand, in the mud, Ganga mud. So he just sits there all day. He's stuck in the mud, in the Ganga. And he takes his beads out and he chants on his beads for 4 hours, 3 or 4 hours. Hey Krishna, Krishna, Krishna. And he has a hat on, a big hat, so he doesn't get sunburned. He's fully immersed in the Ganga. All the Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. And then he goes back and he makes some juice. He doesn't eat food. He doesn't eat normal food. He just goes back and gets all the vegetables, puts them in the juicer. I had lunch with him. Last time I'll have lunch with him for sure. Puts it in the juicer and then he pours it onto the plate. Just all this juiced up vegetables, like broccoli and spinach and potal, no doubt, whatever is available in Mayapur, green vegetable, juice them up, put them on the plate, and Hare Krishna. That's prasadam. No salt, no spice, nothing. He said you can live forever with this diet. I think I'll die in 2 days. He can live forever if he takes his diet. If I live on this diet for 3 days, I won't have to get a ticket to go back home. So, but this is the Ganga can purify after many times bathing, but just by one sight of the devotee, the fallen souls become purified just by seeing them once. You can sit in Ganga for hours and hours, for days and months and years, but the potency of the Ganga isn't as powerful as seeing a devotee once. Just to see a Vaishnava once is very powerful. And then Govinda. Narottam Das Thakur says that the devotees are in the heart of Govinda and they have this intimacy, like we said with Ambarish Maharaj and Lord Vishnu's instruction directive to that the devotees are in the heart of the Lord and the Lord is in the heart of the devotees to Devasa Muni. So the same thing Narottam Das Thakur says here, that Govinda is the resting place of the devotees. And Govinda says that the Vaishnavas are in my heart. That's it. The devotees are in his heart and the Lord is in their heart. And so he desires the dust of the Vaishnavas, lotus feet, birth after birth, That's the perfection. To get this Jivana Chavo Bhagavatamri Renum, to get the dust of the great Vaishnavas, is the desire of Narottam Das Thakur. And it should become our desire. When Mani Griva Nalukavera were liberated by Krishna, who's bound to a wooden grinding mortar, right? Krishna is bound. And he pulled down these two huge trees. And then he liberates these demigods, Mani Griva Nalukavera. And they come out and they offer a series of very beautiful, enlightening verses of prayers to Krishna. And they're praying to Krishna that you can liberate anybody in the universe. This little boy, he's bound up himself. He's got a rope around his belly. He can't go anywhere. But he can give liberation to anybody. They're offering this prayer. That you're such an amazing personality. And then they say that Vane gunanu katane vasano katayam. That let our words now be for the glorification of you and your pastimes and activities. And let everything that we hear be Krishna katha. We just want to hear Krishna katha. And let our hands be used for service to let our hands and our limbs be used for service to the Lord. Hasto chakarma su. Manasa parata vayona. Let our mind be completely absorbed in Krishna. The mind should just become connected with Krishna. And he finishes up his prayer by saying that, let me just see the devotees, Mani Griva and Nalukavera. They say this. They say it together, because they're using this jewel. Let us just see the devotees. Drishti satam dashane. We want to see the devotees. Because by seeing the devotees, this is the perfection of our eyes. To see the devotees. And that will purify our hearts, sanctify our homes, and purify our hearts by seeing this. Srila Prabhupada was such a touchstone of a Vaishnava that whoever saw Srila Prabhupada, or many, many people who saw Srila Prabhupada, they completely became transformed. Srila Prabhupada was remembering in his following Srila Prabhupada DVD series that he was somewhat of an intellectual before he joined the Hare Krishna movement. And he had graduated from university. And he had studied this subject called critical literacy. And it means in critical literacy, you look at a text and you try to understand who the author is and what is his motivation, what is he coming from, what are the influences in this author's writing, etc., etc. And always seeing that the author is different to his words. That's the, you know, like, so he was thinking Prabhupada like that too. He was reading Bhagavatam, he was reading Srila Prabhupada's books from this perspective of critical literacy. That, you know, who is this author and what is his background and what is influencing him to say like this and to understand it. So then when he came to the temple, he saw that Srila Prabhupada was completely the same as his books, that he didn't change. He was the same person that wrote the book, that everything he read, he heard and he saw Prabhupada do. And he was very taken by, very impressed by that. That Prabhupada wasn't different. He was the same person. He was fully in integrity. He was always seeing differences between great personalities and great writers and things. That they had a different lifestyle. They could write really amazing stuff, but they were really out there. But he saw that Prabhupada was writing really amazing stuff. Really amazing things, but that he was very—he was the same wherever he was. He was the same whether he was in a room. He said whether he's in a room with one or two people, or he was in an auditorium with 500 people and a panda with 10,000 people. Prabhupada was the same person. He wasn't affected by an external situation. Internally, he was connected, fully connected with Krishna, and so the darshan of Prabhupada has a powerful, potent effect. On one person or 10,000 people who see Prabhupada, or who touch Prabhupada, or who get to experience something of Prabhupada, or Prabhupada's devotees, Prabhupada's disciples. Same effect, Prabhupada, the grand disciples of Prabhupada, or anyone who's connected with Srila Prabhupada, can carry that same potency, that same shakti. One disciple of Ridhananda Maharaj wrote to him and she said to him recently, she said, Guru Maharaj, I have trouble with Prabhupada's books. Sometimes his writing is too harsh, too much, you know, on the nail. And I want you to help me, you know, can you recommend something a bit softer, a softer approach than Prabhupada? Prabhupada's too hard. So she said, I don't have any problems with the four regular principles. I don't have any problems. I like the devotees so much. I like the devotees. And I love ISKCON. She said, I love ISKCON. I like the devotees. I love my guru. Can do the four regs. It's all good, except for Prabhupada. I've got a real problem with Prabhupada's writings, you know. I don't like it. So Ridhananda Maharaj's response is a very amazing response. And he told her, you know, he didn't blast her that you stupid nonsense, Prabhupada, you know, you blasphemed my Guru Maharaj, Prabhupada, he's pure devotee. He made a mistake. He said, it's so nice that you love ISKCON and that you appreciate the devotees in ISKCON. And he said, we have to develop a broader understanding or appreciation of who Srila Prabhupada is. That we think we have one Prabhupada as the institutional leader of this multi, you know, big corporate institution that has branches all over the world and is such a successful person, like entrepreneur, transcendental entrepreneur. And we see him as the ultimate kind of disciplinarian, or we see him as the ultimate authoritarian, that figure that's sometimes unapproachable. But Prabhupada was very personal with his disciples, especially in the early days. We saw it, we hear from Shama Sundar Prabhu and from different devotees how personal Prabhupada was with them and is with the devotees. And his reciprocation with the devotees who were following his instructions. And so he said that you appreciate Prabhupada's disciples or you appreciate the devotees is an appreciation of Prabhupada. That you appreciate ISKCON, that you like ISKCON, that's an appreciation of Srila Prabhupada. So from your level of realization, from your level of advancement in Krishna consciousness, that's a stage in your development. That's good. That should be celebrated. That you like ISKCON. That you can follow the four regular principles. That you can follow the four regular principles is Prabhupada's mercy. And he said that, therefore, we are all Prabhupada expansions, or we are all Prabhupada creations of Prabhupada's mercy. We're Prabhupada's mercy. Yeah, creations of Prabhupada's mercy. We're expansions of Prabhupada's mercy. And so he encouraged her to continue her appreciation of the devotees and continue her appreciation. And then he said one really important thing at the end of this, you know, explaining, putting Prabhupada in perspective and the devotees and his organization and the mercy that Prabhupada is giving to all conditioned souls through his expansions. He said, it would be a good idea for you to read the wonderful biographies, any one of the beautiful biographies of Prabhupada's disciples or grand disciples that have written biographies of Prabhupada, histories of Prabhupada, because you will develop this naturally. If you read about Prabhupada, your Ever-Well-Wisher or the great transcendental adventure, then you'll develop an attraction for Prabhupada, you'll develop an affection for Srila Prabhupada, and you'll see Prabhupada in many different lights, and from many different angles, and from many different perspectives. Than the Gandharacharya perspective that can sometimes be intimidating, can sometimes be too much for a new devotee, that this person is scary, he's a scary person, but he's a very affectionate person, a very loving person, a very nourishing person, Prabhupada, and nurturing. When Prabhupada came in, when Shamasundar Prabhu was carving Jagannath, he was carving the deities in San Francisco of Lord Jagannath, Balaram Subhadra. He was still, he had a packet of cigarettes on Lord Balaram's shoulder, and he smoked, still smoking cigarettes, and he had a packet of cigarettes just on Lord Balaram's shoulder. It wasn't the car, just placed it there. And Prabhupada came in, and then he flicked them off Balaram, and then they went flying across the room. Prabhupada saw them, and he said, told him, he said, Shyama Sundar, it's not a big problem. Prabhupada wasn't too much into rules. He was giving process. Prabhupada was focusing on technique, not on rules. He was giving a technique to become free from attraction, the desire to want to smoke cigarettes or to go to the races or something like that. These things are not very significant. If you get the technique right, if you chant Hare Krishna, then these things will be very pale into insignificance. So Prabhupada said, just smoke one or two a day. Reduce. He said, now you're smoking 15, smoke 10, and then 5, and then 2, and then you won't have to smoke anymore. How is it? No smoking here. You can't smoke. If you're carving Jagannath, you can't smoke. He didn't say that. He just said, reduce, gradually reduce. And the Shyama Sundar Guru was telling us in Auckland that one time he would take Prabhupada out sometimes for a drive, just to check out scene in San Francisco, just go for a drive on the highway. And he had this really beat up old car, the springs coming through the seats and stuff like that, and he put a mat down. Prabhupada would sit on the mat in the front seat, and his dog was in the back seat. Shyama Sundar's dog, a big, huge dog in the back seat, his head hanging out the window. Prabhupada and Shyama Sundar and this dog screaming at the middle of the highway. And he was showing Prabhupada all the different sites around San Francisco. And Prabhupada, the devotees were also remembering Prabhupada sitting around a fire on the beach, like a bonfire on the beach, and they were cooking potatoes in the fire. Prabhupada was eating the potatoes from the fire, and they're sitting around talking on the beach, having a beach party. And Prabhupada was there. So Prabhupada was very much connected and very much personal with the devotees. And the whole of the Chaitanya Charitamrita, the whole Chaitanya Lila is about Lord Chaitanya, Krishna himself, being personal. And that personal touch attracting so many souls. When Lord Chaitanya was sending the devotees back to their different residences after the Chaturmasya period in Jagannath Puri, after the Ratiyatra, they were going back to their villages, to Bengal, to Mayapur, to all the different villages. So the devotees came to him for blessings, and he came. He would embrace them, and he would give some instruction and tell them, "You go and preach in Bengal, and you preach here," and give them their assignments, like this to Lord Nityananda, to Advaita Acharya. He was giving different instructions, and to one devotee, he said to this group, is it Gunaraj Khan? He said to him that from his place, he comes from a special village. He says from his village, he said that what to speak of the residents of this village, that even the dog in this village, he says Lord Chaitanya, he loves everyone in this village, even the dogs of the village are exalted personalities, and he desires their association. So he was exchanging these very personal reciprocation with the devotees. And then the devotees asked Lord Chaitanya, what should they do? I think it was Satyaraj Khan. What should we do when we go back? And Lord Chaitanya said, you should seek out the association of Vaishnavas and stay in their association only. And they said, well, who is a Vaishnava? How do we know who is a Vaishnava? How can we tell when we go to the village who is a Vaishnava? So Lord Chaitanya's response was, whoever chants Hare Krishna is a Vaishnava. Once, whoever chants Hare Krishna is a Vaishnava. So it's a very liberal, very broad definition of a Vaishnava who chants. And then in this discussion in the Madhya Lila, it says that if you have faith in this instruction of Lord Chaitanya and you chant offensively, then you become completely purified. If you really believe in the potency of the holy name of the Lord, then whoever chants Hare Krishna is a Vaishnava. And that has a potency to purify them and to purify those who hear the chanting of the holy name of the Lord. And then Vasudeva Datta came to the Lord, and Lord Chaitanya had asked, he begged Shivananda Sen that please look after Vasudeva Datta because he's got family members and he's got so many responsibilities, but whatever money he earns, he gives it away. He spends it on Ganga worship or whatever, puja, and he doesn't look after it. He's very reckless. So he said, you look after him, make sure that everything's sorted with his family, because this Vasudev Datta is the unique devotee. And then Vasudev Datta came before Lord Chaitanya, and Lord Chaitanya embraced him. And Vasudev Datta was crying. And then when Lord Chaitanya saw him crying, he started crying. And he said, Vasudev Datta said, he sees so many sinful living entities in the universe, so many wretched personalities, Kamakandis and Gyanis here, that have no attraction for Krishna, that got no inclination toward bhakti. And they're so sinful, they've committed so many sinful activities that their destination is very precarious. It doesn't look good for them, where they're going, these people. So let me take all of their sinful reactions on my head. Let them be free from their sin, from their reactions that they've got. And they can go back to Godhead. That was his prayer, his desire to Lord Chaitanya. Let me take their sinful reactions, let them go back to Godhead, and whatever happens to me, that doesn't matter. And Lord Chaitanya, it says, Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami says, Lord Chaitanya's heart melted, and he bathed him in his tears. And he said to Vasudev Datta that there's no need for you to take anything, any sinful reactions from anybody. Because just by your desire, they're all liberated. Their sinful reactions are finished because of Vasudev Datta's intense purity, that whatever the Vaishnava desires, that will happen. So if we desire the liberation of the conditioned souls, Krishna will make arrangements that they're liberated. And there he describes that just like in there's one particular tree, it has millions and millions of fruits. And if one fruit falls off the tree, it's not very significant. Or he says, in a pot of mustard seeds, there are millions of universes, and that can be compared to the mustard seeds in one pot of just one, millions and millions of mustard seeds. And if a couple of mustard seeds pop out and they go, it's not very significant. So if all the living entities in this universe, the one quarter portion of the Lord's creation, if they're liberated, it's not very significant, not a big deal. And Krishna can do that without giving any sinful reaction to you, because you're a pure devotee. You don't have to suffer. And in the purport, Prabhupada quotes this Karmani Nidati Kintu Chabhakti Bhajan verse from Brahma Samhita, that Krishna takes care of sin. For the devotees, there's no sinful reaction. Krishna will destroy the sinful reactions coming for the devotees. So even if a devotee wills, if a devotee desires that people become free from sin, they'll be free. And then finally, I just wanted to share with you a pastime in the same sequence in this Madhulila of Sabhavamarachari. When all the devotees have gone home and they've gone back to their different respective places, and Lord Nityananda had gone with the mercy of Lord Jagannath and Lord Chaitanya's instruction to Sachimata, that he does it in fact appear at her house and she offers boga. And the last Vijay Dasami day, that was me. I did come and I did eat all the offering, so to console Mother Sachi. And Lord Chaitanya was thinking that he made such a mistake for taking sannyas, happy to leave his mother. He said that it was a grave offense to leave his mother, that he made a mistake. He did it, he just said there's something like, on the spur of the moment, he made this decision to take sannyas, but it was a wrong decision. But what can he do? He can't go back. So he sent the mercy of Lord Jagannath and this instruction that he appears there every day, he's taking her prasadam. He's still eating Mother Sachi's prasadam every day. You know, Sabhavam Bhattacharya came there when all the devotees had gone. He said, this is my opportunity now to get the Lord into my house. Because that's what the Vaishnavas want. They want to get the Lord, they want to get the devotees into their houses, because their houses become purified, sanctified. And just by thinking of them, their house becomes sanctified. But by seeing them and touching them, offering them a seat in their house and bathing their feet in their house, it becomes very auspicious. So Sarvamanacharya, he approached Lord Chaitanya and he asked, now everybody's gone, come to my house for 30 days. Take prasadam in my house every day for 30 days. And Lord Chaitanya said, he can't come for 30 days because this is against the principle of sannyas ashram. He said, all right, come for 20 days. And he said, not even 20 days. 20 days is the lot also. I can't come for 20 days. And then he was negotiating. Like, all right, 15. And then he says, you've got 12 or 10 sannyasis that are with you. These different, you know, Bharatis and Puris, all these different sannyasis that are with you, Sri Dhammada. Then they can come on alternate days, but you should come for
15 days. He said, no, I can't come for 15 days. So he got him down to 5 days. Right, 5 days in a month. He nailed Lord Chaitanya to 5 days in a month. And that Paramananda Purusha came for 5 days, already arranged, he said, that's 10 days. And then he got the other devotees, the 8 remaining sannyasis. He said, Sri Damodar will come, because he's an intimate friend anyway. He's always coming to my house. I don't have to invite him, but I'll give him some days anyway. And then the remaining days, the other 8 sannyasis, they'll pick up 2 days each. So Sarvabhaumacharya, he sorted out a whole 30 days, the next 30 days, at his house to invite the devotees in, to bathe their feet, to sit them down, to feed them, to offer them garland, to smear their body with sandalwood pulp, and to have their association for the perfection and purification of his existence. And so Lord Chaitanya agreed and he said, all right, then you come today at lunchtime. So the day that he invited him, the day he completed his negotiations, he invited him the same day. And he went home and he told his wife. And his wife was so happy that Lord Chaitanya would be in her house in the next 4 hours. She was thinking, what a blessing, what a benediction. And it said, Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami said that there was always a lot of supply of vegetables in the house of Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya. So they didn't have to go to the market and the shop and stuff like that. But everything was there. So immediately they started cooking. It said he helped. Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya started to cut up the vegetables and help cook with his wife. And she cooked so many preparations. When Lord Chaitanya came there, he saw the preparations. You know, he was greeted in the house, and he bathed Lord Chaitanya's feet, which was a perfection of his life. And then he sat him down. Lord Chaitanya, so he was confused about the sitting place and the arrangements. This is Krishna's, and this is Krishna's plate. Take Krishna's plate away. Bring a banana leaf plate for me. This is Krishna's plate. So that after that initial kind of settling in process, Lord Chaitanya looked at the preparations. And there was like literally thousands of preparations, and it was cooked in 4 or 5 hours. And Lord Chaitanya was bewildered. And he said that you couldn't cook this much prasadam on millions of stoves and millions of cooks. All of the cooks in the Jagannath Puri temple couldn't cook this much in 4 hours. How did you cook like that in 4 hours? You cooked so many. And then Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami gave a list of what was cooked. And Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur says that Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami was an excellent cook. Otherwise, how could he describe these preparations? He must have known cooking really well to know these preparations and give really, it's like a menu. You know, he's giving the whole menu of Lord Chaitanya. So Lord Chaitanya took that prasadam and he was saying, but I can't eat all this. This is ridiculous. I can't eat all this. This is not for sannyasi. This is not sannyasi diet. I'll just take one handful and honor the rest, and you can distribute it. And then Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, who's a great logician and he was a great scholar, he convinced Lord Chaitanya that I know who you are. I know you can eat this time, 56 times a day, hundreds of this 56 times a day. And I know that in Dwarka, you have 16,000 wives and they all cook for you every day. So that's nothing. You can eat 16,108 prasadam, breakfast, lunch, and dinner. You can eat this. And then Lord Chaitanya was defeated. What could he say? All right, I do have a lot of wives. I do have a lot of palaces. I can eat a lot. So he ate. And he ate and he ate. And that's when the Amogha turns up. But we won't finish up on Amogha Lila, but we'll just finish on that meditation of Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, feeding the Lord, inviting the Lord to his house, sanctifying his house, purifying his house, and purifying our consciousness for hearing about that and reading about the pastime of the Vaishnavas and the Vaishnavas' obsession or fixation upon hosting devotees, being with devotees, making sure that the devotees are always in their houses, that their rooms are filled with Vaishnavas, and the devotees will never be without. That is it's a great blessing to have someone knock on your door as a Vaishnava. A Vaishnava knocks on your door and the devotee feels very happy to greet a Vaishnava and to invite them in and to feed them and to make sure they stay for a long time. I tell that story of when I was in Pune. We stayed in Pune in a devotee's house a few years ago, and he made a nice arrangement for us. He was very happy to have us stay there. I think I was by myself at that time, but we stayed there together with my wife. And this time I had to stay with him. And he, you know, he had a big, nice big bed, and he had a new house. And so I go into his bed, and we're sleeping in this big double bed together. His wife stayed somewhere else, and we're sleeping there in bed. And he starts snoring. And I said, oh my God. So I got to get some sleep. So I went outside, and I quietly got up. And I walked across the room, and I went out into the lounge room, and I was lying on the couch. And then this devotee, Krishna Avatar, he comes out. He comes out to me and says, Babuji, what happened? What's wrong? Why are you out here? And I said, oh, well, I just need to get some rest. I want to stay here. And he says, I'm going to stay here with you. So he stays next to me on the floor, under the couch, and starts snoring. I said, all right, I'm going to go back to the bed. So I went back into the bedroom. I said, Babu, don't you come, you stay here. But he really wanted to, you know, he wanted to please me, but he was snoring like anything. It wasn't so pleasing. But it's very endearing because I always remember him and I always share his generosity to Bhagavatam. He was, he's harassment on me. Any questions or comments?
This is my feeling very formal. I've got an example of how we can relate with, you know, in terms of those devotees who ask Prabhupada, she asked him, what is the meaning of spiritual master? And Prabhupada said, actually, I'm not your spiritual master. It's just a formality. You should think of me as your spiritual father, your eternal father.
Mm. Nice. Yeah. Many times Prabhupada said like that, that we are all his daughters and sons, and sometimes fathers and mothers. That we are his fathers and mothers. Because we're looking after him. Yeah.
No, it's very nice that because of course, especially when this book distributors are on the road there in on the street, there's always a frustration, you know, when you've got a book in your hand and you want to give it to someone, you know, and as you're saying, that by us being there, just by that desire to purify the living entities, that become purified.
Definitely. The Vaishnavas are a touchstone, and they create auspiciousness wherever they go, the devotees. Sometimes we appreciate it, sometimes we don't appreciate it, but they're touchstone. Anything else? Prabhu?
What about ecstasy of Vakrishna Pandit?
Sorry?
In this night, Vakrishna Pandit, you are dancing for 72 hours continuously.
Yeah.
No food, no drink. No,
you're not already. Yeah. Full absorption.
Sure.
Like Prakshit Maharaj. He's fully absorbed now. He's not thirsty anymore. He said, I don't want to drink now. One time I wanted to drink, I got into trouble. So now I'm just going to stop drinking and hear. Hear and chant about Krishna.
Hi, Krishna. Sometimes. Sometimes we, out of our thoughts, we do bad things.
Mm.
So we fall into a certain, we are not able to get out of that bad thoughts or things.
Mm.
So how to get out of it?
Mm.
Which is the best way to get out of it?
Good question. How to get out of this treadmill of bad thoughts? The ultimate loophole, the ultimate kind of path out of the samsara is to connect with Krishna. And there are many, many ways to do it. And that's why we say the Prabhupada gave a technique, or he gives a process rather than the rules and regulations. They come later. So to get out of it, to sort of trip the negative routine,
then we have to connect with this, the potency of Daivi Shakti, the potency of the Lord's energy, spiritual energy, and that's through the chanting the holy name of the Lord. And that's why the Maha Mantra is such a powerful form of association, that the Maha Mantra can and does and will and has supported us in our attempt to become free from that cycle of repeated birth and death, the cycle of negative thoughts, thinking bad things and contemplating sinful activity. But the Maha Mantra, praying to the Lord, praying to Krishna that we can become free from this miserable existence of sin, will help us. And when we connect with pure devotional service, Rupa Goswami says that this pure devotional service completely frees us from that. That completely of the kutta and the bija, completely finished. That's the potency of bhakti, of pure devotional service. But in the meantime, while we're not performing pure unalloyed manchaya yavichadina bhakti, while we're not completely absorbed in devotional service, then we need strong association. It's called a fence around the bhakti lata bija, that seed of the bhakti that we're trying to cultivate and nurture and nourish. We need to protect it, because it can easily get trampled or can be strangled by other bijas, by other weeds. And we might not be able to identify those weeds. So we need to surround ourselves by some good gardeners who know weeds and they know how much water, shravanadi jala, how much water to put. Or as Prabhupada says, or Purikshit Maharaj says, the expert physician who can administer this medicine of Krishna Katha that will purify us of the Bhavaroga, which is a cycle of sinful activity. Bhavaroga. Bhavoshara Srotam Anubiranath. Take the medicine of the holy name, Bhakti No Thakur says. There's nothing more powerful in the 14 worlds than the medicine of the holy name of the Lord. Mantra Shadi. It's a medicine, the mantra is the ultimate medicine. So we take that medicine. The whole. Yes, Will.
Some devotees have opinion that everyone should go to Holy Dawn every year.
Mandavari. Mandavari. And that one devotee is not any Rupa Prabhu. Or a change of Rupa Prabhu.
And some people have a completely opposite opinion, which is also specific, that wherever devotees and Lord is, that's holy place, and you get all the potency there. So why to take trouble going holy down and go to something and you get all the energy?
That's true. Don't have to go. It said that, I mean, Prabhupada wanted devotees to go every year. He said that devotees should go there and take sangha in Mayapur Dham and become invigorated and rejuvenated and recharged and come back to their preaching fields with increased vigor to give Krishna consciousness. And it's very powerful. The Holy Dham is definitely a potent chintamani. It's a touchstone consciousness, and when you connect with the holy Dham and you're not committing offences, it's very purifying. But the holy Dham, as you say, sometimes why go through the inconvenience, the cost, the expense, the harassment at the immigration department or whatever. So many things would be, it's a big austerity to go to the holy Dham, and when you get there, but the holy Dham is here. It's here in a very powerful way. And so do we need to go to the physical holy Dham when we have a holy Dham here? The holy Dham here is very concentrated in the temple, inside the temple, in front of Radha Balabha, in front of Gauri Time. It's a very concentrated Dham. Right? It's a strong potency in front of the deities. But we have a tendency when we go outside the door
to forget about Radha Bala.
Mm-hmm.
That's a problem. And the energy outside in Dank Street and further away you go from the temple, Richardson Street, Victoria Ave, the further away you go, the more kind of contaminated we become in one sense. That the less inspired we are to remember bhakti, Krishna bhakti, and we start checking out all the neighbors' swimming pools and their cars and stuff like this, and think, wow, this is pretty cool, this is a really cool suburb. And so in the Dham, when you leave Krishna Balaram temple, or when you leave Radha Madhava temple, then everything still reminds you of Krishna. That's the potency of the holy Dham. And everybody greets you, Radhe Radhe, or whatever. So it's surcharged. The place is surcharged wherever you go, from outside the temple, inside the temple. But here, you know, when you get outside the temple, it's not so surcharged. It's surcharged with a different energy, different vibration. You know, the Melbourne cricket ground or something like that. It's got a lot of Shakti here. What's that Laver Pavilion? Rod Laver Stadium. I never got to see that anyway, but it's a big pavilion. So that's got a lot of influence here, and therefore it is important to go to the Dham. But I would say from experience, definitely you don't have to go every year on the calendar, you know, on the month, that this is my time to go to the Dham. Because I didn't go for many, many years to the Dham because of service. And the only time I could go was in winter, in the Dham's winter. I go to Vrindavan in January, and freeze, and leave the summer and go to Vrindavan winter. If we can perceive the holy Dham here, that's the best. It's the most convenient. It's the cheapest. But we do need to get that charge. We do need to recharge, but we need to do it in a kind of a, almost in a regulated way. Like everything that we do in Krishna consciousness, in a regulated way. If we go to the Dham just on the calendar every year, it can become a form of kind of traveling, sense gratification, tourism, go to the Dham. Atita buddhi shagirina kahichit. But if you go to the Dham just for tourism, it's not beneficial. You go to the Dham to seek out holy people. And here, this is one of the temples that I've seen mostly in Australasia, probably anywhere, where you get a lot of sadhus come here. Every second week there's another billboard up outside to say this person's speaking and this person's coming, and come and get the mercy. So the Dham's coming here a lot in terms of holy people, sadhus. So sometimes when devotees go regularly on the calendar, on the clock, they don't appreciate it as much either. It becomes, sometimes it's a getaway. It's our pad, we just go there and maybe not go there and hear classes, maybe not go there to seek out the holy people, maybe go there to swim in the Jamuna or something like that, or the Ganga, which is nice, but in Bhagavatam it says if you just go there for that purpose, it's not the right purpose. Yatita buddhi shalini na kahichi. We go to the Dham to hear from the sadhus in the Dham, from the devotees who are living there, to bring that back with us. That purification, that association, and then to share that with others. That's the process. I hope that person who has to go to the Dham every year is here. If he's not, someone can tell him.
It's interesting, Prabhupada said this is not Melbourne, this is Vaikuntha.
Yeah.
And you just have to be practical. It's good you go to the Dham. For the reasons that you mentioned. At the same time, if everybody went to the Dham, we wouldn't have a Dham here, because as is mentioned in this verse, the purity is created by the Vaishnavas, by the presence of the Vaishnavas. And if all the Vaishnavas went to the Holy Dham, there wouldn't be any association here, so we've got to manage both. And so that's why we don't all pack up the temple, put the deity worship in the mothballs and go off to the
we always appreciate, my wife and myself always appreciate Melbourne Temple, because we've been in other temples where everyone does bail out. And it's like, where'd everybody go? And there's one devotee left doing all the cooking and all the dressing and three sets of beers. And it's not really fair on that devotee. That devotee, if that happens to them regularly, they'll get too stressed out. Too much bhakti. That's happened. We witnessed that one time for the Fiji opening. All the devotees want to go to Fiji. It's the opening of the temple. It's really auspicious. All the sadhus will be there. Maharajas will be there. The whole temple left, including us. But we weren't so important in the temple. But all the pujaris left. And, my God. That poor pujari who left. Was it Naradishi? Naradishi was left there on his own. No wonder he's in Brisbane. It's a regulation. Everything is, you know, if it's regulated, it's purifying. Kanantaraj Shrimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Shri Gopala ki jai, Gopala ki jai.